Hi everyone. Thanks for coming. My name's Rachel Roscoe. I'm a writer for the Austin Chronicle, which is Austin's all-weekly newspaper. If you're visiting, definitely grab one for our South By coverage. And today we're here to talk about Project Traction, which is a mentorship program created to combat gender inequity in the recording studio by providing women and non-binary musicians opportunities to hone their skills. And I had the opportunity to write about Project Traction last month. The name came from a local musician named Gina Chavez, and it's just all about giving women footing or traction in the production industry. I'm going to allow our panelists to introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Jim Eno. I'm in a band called Spoon that is managed by John Silva, just to be clear. And I also have a recording studio called Public Hi-Fi and produce records when I'm not touring.
I'm Megs Kelly. I'm with Magna Carta, a hip-hop, soul, R&B, rap, jazz, whole thing, eclectic, five-piece band here. And I'm also a writer and filmmaker.
Hi, I'm Sarah Hauser. I'm a songwriter and musician. I was formerly in a band called Lowen and currently play out as S.L. Hauser. And yeah, and I'm also a music teacher.
Yes, and everyone on this panel has played shows this week, so it's very impressive that they're here on Friday of South by Southwest looking bright and shiny. But yeah, first I wanted to let you, Jim, just talk about kind of how the inspiration for this project initially came about.
Sure. I would say, like, over the pandemic, you know, things sort of grinded to a halt, as everyone probably felt. And I started looking for, like, the next thing that maybe I could do. And I love mentoring. I do a lot of mentorship. I am a Grammy mentor. I work with the University of Ohio, which we have some representatives here. And I've done 6 years of classes with them. So 1 week a year, I invite five students down to Austin, and I produce local bands. The band gets music for free. The students get to watch. So it's a really great program. So I was looking for the next thing to do, and I stumbled upon this statistic that was, it basically said that if you look at the recording and engineering field in the U.S., it's about 5% women. And I'm like, that makes absolutely no sense to me. This can't be right. And so I kept researching it, and the number is definitely below 10%. So I had the idea that, like, I work with so many talented women, and I don't think that it's a stretch to go from being a musician to being a producer. So I felt like having a mentorship program where I could, you know, work with these great, you know, female and non-binary musicians that I've worked with, produce a track together, you know, listen to demos, record the track, and then mix it. You know, I felt like that was a real way that we could change that number. You know, it at the end of this program, we'll have 8 songs produced by 8 new producers, basically, and that's just, you know, showing traction in this field.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like what you said about it really not being that far off from being an independent musician who has a hand in your own music making to producing. And yeah, I know that that's kind of the case for you, Megs and Sarah. And I was just wondering what kind of y'all's background was in production before coming into this project.
My background was pretty limited to standing over the shoulders of some of the producers that I work with. My producer partner, Dougie, he would be making beats, and I would always have a hand in the arrangement and the songwriting process, because those two things really go hand in hand a lot for me. And so that was like my first introduction into it, just kind of really understanding the basics and understanding like all of the different tools that were at my disposal, and just kind of how to make everything fit together and work well with the lyrics and the writing. It wasn't until probably recently during the pandemic, where we were separated and we couldn't be in the same room together, and we were trying to produce a album during the pandemic with little to no resources or, you know, equipment. And it kind of challenged me to, you know, really start to understand on a deeper level how to work some of the, you know, the systems and the tools. And I really kind of, I got really interested in it. And from there, I got this opportunity to work with Jim on this project. And I just felt like it was just, you know, perfect timing. I always wanted to really be more hands-on with it, but, you know, we were always working with our band that I never really got the chance to just take a breather. And, you know, the pandemic allowed us to reset, and we met some cool people who put us in touch. And, you know, from there I was able to really, you know, step into it in a larger capacity, which was pretty cool. But what about
yeah.
you?
yeah, I'd say I had a similar kind of timeline. I think, you know, I was always working on my own music, standing over somebody's shoulder going, you know, hey, I'd like to do this here or something. And also did a lot of home demoing in the pandemic. Also, having dissolved my former band and kind of starting a new project, I was kind of getting even more into demoing and kind of fleshing out ideas by myself with my home setup. Aside from working on my own music with production, I also have been really fortunate to do a lot of session work for other artists, which gave me kind of a glimpse into a lot of different forms of producing and observing other people and how they produce, and also being to kind of chime in on production ideas, even though at the time I don't think that I realized I was chiming in on production ideas. I thought I was just there and be a part of the session. I've always been really into production. I just didn't realize that that's what I was drawn to about the studio until Jim called me, really. And then it was like, oh my God, duh. Like, that is what I've really loved. You know, live music is obviously a huge part of my life and stuff, but the studio has always really felt like home to me. And this is definitely my first foray into kind of working on somebody else's music exclusively and not my own or my own songwriting. But it is something that has been a passion of mine for a long time.
Absolutely, yeah. And I loved you and Jim's connection, that you had actually recorded vocals on Hot Thoughts back in the day.
That was actually one of my first sessions.
Didn't seem like it.
It was, I'd played Float Fest earlier that day, and I left pretty much right after we played to hightail it to Public Hi-Fi, probably smelling like a music festival when I rolled in. But I've been lucky to work with Jim on a few different projects as a session vocalist and pianist, so I'm very grateful to be on his radar.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you were talking about, so part of this project was that they're producing music for other artists. Did you want to just maybe explain more kind of the format that ended up emerging for this project?
Yeah, so most of the producers are producing a track with me. So what we would do is we would go and find a band that the producer was sort of passionate about. Then we would reach out to that band, see if they wanted to participate in the project. We would ask them for demos. Me and the producer would go through, be like, yeah, let's go after this track. and then do pre-production meetings with the artist. One thing about production is you also have to finish on time and in budget and everything. So, you know, we talk about number of days. We talk about, okay, what instruments do you play? Do we need to hire anyone to come in, you know, to play keys or to do drums or whatever? So we do about 2 days of recording and then mix the track. So that's normally how the traditional process goes. Megs and I came up with like a different idea, and we wanted to look at it like how a lot of hip hop tracks sample music. So what we did is we brought a band in, like a jazz band, and we came up with a bunch of references, and we would explain the track to them without them knowing, sort of like, hey, play a groove like this or whatever. Some of it was successful, some of it wasn't, you know? But we came up with a lot of feels and a lot of chord progressions and stuff like that. So then what we did is then we grabbed the feel that we liked and we're building off of that, making it more modern, but we actually recorded it as opposed to sampling it. So that this Megs is doing the one outlier track, you know?
Which I didn't know was different until
about 10
like
minutes
10
ago.
Minutes ago. She's until like, you're... yeah, yours is a little more non-traditional. And I was like, well, what is everybody else doing?
Yeah, none of us have really, I mean, none of us have seen, been a part of anybody else's session. So we know very little about,
that's not,
know,
by design. I think it's like my communications are not the greatest. And also because like I would love to have like, kickoffs and hey, let's hang and stuff, but this project started about 6 months ago and there was a pandemic, so we've been doing a lot. We had a really badass like 10 people Zoom to start. I thought that was fun.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, but I also love that like all of these songs are recorded at Jim's local public hi-fi studio, and they really are formatted as just, you know, a regular recording session with you doing some mentorship. But yeah, people are coming out with a production credit just like they would, you know, professionally working as a producer. And I think that's something that just seemed really practical about this project.
Yeah, like you look at like what it would take to be a producer as far as like a career. And one of the things you look at is as an artist, you want to try to diversify as much as possible, like what income you're getting. So people like Sarah and people like Megs, I mean, they can easily move over into production and then have that as an income stream if they like pick a band and can sort of balance all the work. But I feel like that is one important part about being an artist, is trying to do as many different things as you can. So sort of opening up the door for that. And the other thing that it will help is production credit, word of mouth. You know, like when you're a band like with Spoon and we're looking for a new producer, we like talk to our friends. Hey, who produced that track or whatever? Who do you recommend? So the more credits that you can get as a producer, the more people you've produced, and maybe word of mouth will land you something that is going to sort of jump you even further in your career.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you're a great source for that, because I think, you know, the city of Austin has watched you grow as a producer, as someone who that started as an independent artist. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess, Sarah, I was just going to ask y'all to maybe talk a little more about the particular songs that you ended up producing and what the kind of process was like in the studio with those.
Sure. I produced an artist named Lizzie Lemon. Lehman. I forget. How it's pronounced. I should know that. I know how it's spelled. She's great. She's a wonderful friend and a songwriter that I've always admired. So we did the more traditional thing. I went through a lot of Lizzie's Instagram videos. She posts a lot of her songs to her Instagram, and was kind of listening through stuff and found one that I thought was really cool, and I could hear a lot of ideas. I kind of took her demo that she sent me and kind of reverse engineered it and built it just like a really simple version with keys to allow me to play with different chords and some song structure. Sent it back to Jim, sent it to Lizzie. We kind of did like the virtual back and forth. Then when it came to actually being in the studio and working on the song, we built it really from the drums up, which is how I write a lot of music myself anyway. Jim created like a really cool drum loop, and we just started stacking bass keys, everything from there, and then doing a lot of vocal arranging and backup vocals and all that kind of stuff. So, yes.
Absolutely, yeah. And these songs from these two artists have not been released yet, but they will eventually come out as Volume 1 of Project Traction as a kind of album. And yeah, Megs, you had a song as well with some artists, if you wanted to talk about who you ended up working with.
Yeah, for our song, we ended up working with a singer-songwriter here in based in Austin named Tori Blake. She's incredibly talented. We actually write together a lot, and it just felt most natural for me to just gravitate toward someone I knew that, like, you know, we could really pull a record together. And I was also eager to introduce her to Jim and, you know, for us to get in the studio together. And as Jim was saying, like, we built this entire track kind of from the ground up and then pulled it apart, reconstructed it. We were like literally in the studio, like sampling the keys and really just like rebuilding it. And what was cool about that was like, I feel like I approached it the same way that I approach a lot of my like writing or any other creative work that I do. And I always say that I just kind of let it kind of become what it is going to be. So a lot of the way, you know, we're in there messing with stuff, and Jim's like, you know, what do you think from here? And I'm just like, well, you know, I think maybe when we bring the singer in or the songwriter in, like, let's see where it goes from there, you know? Or, you know, once we retrack bass, like, let's see what it feels like then. So it's just like, it changes along the way for me, and but in a good way, because it really becomes what it's meant to be like that whole time. So each piece to me really adds to it and, you know, excuse me, really kind of creates the fuller picture. So where we are now is we've just been in the studio writing, and that's been really fun. I was able to put a verse on it. And even now, like, now I'm hearing different harmonies and, you know, different melodies to throw on. You know, I want to experiment with different vocal arrangements and, you know, backing tracks and stuff like that. Or, I'm sorry, backing vocals and stuff like that. And I think that I didn't know that I wanted to do that until I got to that, you know, that step. So Jim's probably going to have a heart attack because it's
yeah, we do have to finish the track, though, Megs. We got to finish someday.
Yeah, it's everybody learns
sounds
that
like
about
2 weeks
me.
Of recording time. For
I think
you,
that's
the
slippery slope in the studio. Is like, is the painting ever really done? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
if
you let me loose, like, I will never leave a vocal booth. I'll just keep, you know, stacking and stacking and stuff. So I think that is one thing that I really learned from Jim as well through the, this is like when to be like, okay, yeah, let's step away, you know?
We'll work on that, little Megs.
Nah.
Yeah. I love to hear, I think from a lot of y'all, like even all the ideas you're saying, that being told that you're wearing just the producer hat, you know, really freed up a lot of mental space for y'all to become that more project manager, you know, like person running the show. I thought that was like really interesting to hear about.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure, like as an artist, to like come up with parts and like to write and to like keep doing things until the song is good. But as a producer, you can sort of be like, okay, I think it needs something here. I think it needs something here. You go do it and come back to me in a week. You know what I mean? You make the artist do that kind of stuff. You know, so that's one of the things I've been, you know, everyone I work with writes, you know, but it's to sort of take a step back and be like up here looking down on the track. And it gives you the freedom to have like a overall view of the song, which, you know, I don't have to write this one line for the second half of the second verse. You know, I don't have to do that. So it gives you like sort of a perspective, and I'm trying to pull away the producers from the writing part and hey, look up above and let's look at the track as a whole. And also one other thing is hammering home the fact that like we are essentially like in the service business. You know, we are producing a track for an artist, and we have to make sure that that artist is happy with the track. You know, it's not our track. You know, I've worked with a lot of bad producers that think it's their track, and you know, it's really hard to be in a studio with people like that. So, you know, to be like, yeah, let's make the best track for Lizzie and she has to be really happy with it. Our name is going to be in the liner notes. You know, this is going to be really her track.
Yeah, alongside the kind of, you know, more emotional, like working with people aspects, I think something that came up a lot talking about what had held people back from production was the assumption that they didn't have the technical know-how to kind of move into that area. So yeah, for any of y'all, what did this kind of make you realize is the boundaries of what a producer should have, which I know can be a lot of different forms?
I think like, I don't know, being able to, yeah, I didn't really know what, kind of what you were saying earlier, like that we were producing all along. And so I never really knew like if I had the right tools for it or, you know, the right language, and especially the language. But I think now I just kind of understand it a lot, like a lot of the other creative roles that, you know, I work in, and it's just really kind of being like, I don't know, being able to direct, you know, and just kind of being able to see this, like you were saying, this full view, and kind of being able to put everything in place to like see it happen. And that's a lot of different moving parts and a lot of other people that are doing the things that you're not the expert in. And to me, that's like really fun. And that's always a role that I've like loved to be in. And so this wasn't really a far stretch. And now I feel like, having been through the process with Jim and having, you know, done it a couple times in this past year, I realized that it is a lot more accessible than I, you know, thought. And it is something that, you know, I do have the tools for, and it's not exactly, and it's different for everybody. And a lot of people work differently. A lot of producers may be more hands-on, a lot maybe more like call the shots type. And so it's just kind of like finding your groove and finding what you're good at. And I think realizing that I kind of get to create what that role is for me, but also in service of the artist, which, you know, when you're working with people that, you know, you enjoy working with, that comes naturally, you know.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Like, I think I also had, you know, aside from not feeling like I had the engineering knowledge or technical vocabulary to produce, I had kind of compartmentalized the two roles. Like, I was like, I'd put myself in a box that I didn't really know that I'd put myself into, which was that, oh, I'm a songwriter and a musician, and that's not my world. And, you know, the reality is like that producing is really all about generating ideas, and effective communication. And, you know, I couldn't tell you that I want a gated snare on something, but I could show you a track that probably had a gated snare that I knew I wanted it to sound like. And so, you know, I think, you know, once I kind of like got over the fact that I, you know, probably didn't have like all the vocabulary I needed, but this whole kind of project has reassured me in that I do know how to communicate my ideas, and I can do that in service of another person's song, which is just, you know, what producing really is. So,
yeah, and I feel like it's important that there are a lot of different types of producers. There are producers who are very good at engineers also, but there are other producers that are very high level and they rely on an engineer to create the sounds that they hear in their head. So in other words, showing references, like Sarah mentioned, like to what is a gated snare or something like that. Or there's one of the producers, Mary Claire, and I've worked with her before, and she is very visual. So she's like, I want this verse to be feel like we're in, you know, the North Pole in December, and, you know, the Northern Lights are in the background. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I can do that. You know, like visually, I could sort of see how that would sound. You know, it's weird, but you guys who do music can probably, you know, figure that out. So you can communicate any way you want to the engineer, you know, but just having the tools to realize cold, warm, you know, crisp, dry, roomy, you know, there's just like little words that help along the way.
I love that. I certainly don't know what a gated snare is, and I write about music.
Well, once you hear it and somebody tells you that it's a gated snare, you know what it is. Then you know, it's just that you need to have somebody that knows what that is, that can tell you that that's what it's called, that your idea in your head is called this, and next time you want to have that idea, you'll know what the word is.
We'll listen to a lot of Phil Collins and then we'll get it. Okay.
Okay. I'm ready for this educational experience. Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, you mentioned Mary Claire Glazer is from Lady Heartwing, and Kevin, she was another of the women and non-binary producers on this project. But yeah, Jim, they were kind of talking about, you know, what was instilled on them, but I'm sure people would love to hear, you know, you've been mentoring students in production for years. How would you kind of describe your approach to mentoring a producer, instilling that information in them?
Huh, sure. Let's see. I mean, when I produce, I sort of look at it like if I'm producing, say, a four-person band, I'm like the fifth person, you know? So I'm like on your team. I'm not like some guy who's going to like make you go in a direction you don't want to go into. One thing, as a producer, you have the freedom of not writing anything. So I may be like, okay, I hate that gated snare. I'll keep on this gated snare thing. But like, I hate that gated snare, but like, you know, I had nothing to do with it. Are you sure you like it? You know, that kind of thing. And I'm an outsider, so I have like sort of a listener's perspective, you know? So anyway, that was sort of a tangent. But I feel like when I work with a producer or do mentorship, I look at that person as another member, okay? So I feel like we've been very collaborative, and like I want to get, you know, the producer's input. We try to like have meetings alone so we can get on the same page and then, you know, work with the artist and things like that. But really it is about like, you know, having a partnership with this producer, you know? I mean, I feel like I learn stuff too. I mean, that's why I love doing these classes and working with, you know, great producers like y'all. You know, I mean, I'm learning stuff all the time too. So, you know, it's good for me.
Yes. Yeah. This is not Jim's first foray into letting some of the community record in your studio. I know you've done other projects, like the Song Confessional podcast has been involved there. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I wanted to reiterate the statistics that you kind of mentioned earlier that this project had been based on. So it was a 2021 report by the University of California that found women make up only 2.6% of producers of popular music. And while it's harder to tally kind of, but the participation of women producers outside the Billboard Hot 100, just because independent music is endless, there have been past surveys from Women's Audio Mission and the Audio Engineering Society that place representation of women in producing and engineering below 10%. So that's kind of the amount, 10%, that we've been comfortable moving with Project Traction. And I was just wondering, Sarah or Megs, when y'all hear that, like, did that make you think of any personal experiences in your own life, or just kind of your own coming up in independent music that would maybe hold people back from stepping into that producer role?
I'm that statistic doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, I've been kind of actively playing music since I was, you know, like 12 or 13. And more often than not, I found myself in rehearsal rooms and studios and band practices with predominantly men my whole life. I ended up at a college where the ratio, a music school that the ratio, I believe my freshman year was 7 to 1, where I was the only woman in classes a lot of the times. In sessions, I was almost always one of the few women in there. And most of the time, if there were other women, it was that we were doing harmonies. I very rarely saw women hired as instrumentalists. I even personally was rarely hired as an instrumentalist. I've been hired more as a singer, which is not really predominantly my background. But it never surprises me that there's something as kind of stark as less than 10%, because I've seen it and like lived in that world for so long. But I think that it's, I think there's so many reasons why that is the case. I think that it's just that door never felt like it was open for women. So, it doesn't surprise me, long story short.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I would echo that. I mean, I've been doing music in Austin now, probably close to 10 years. And in terms of like women or non-binary engineers, I can literally think of like two women that I've worked with. You know, one being a sound engineer in the live arena, and then, you know, the other being, you know, in film work. And so it really it's not surprising, but I think the craziest part about it is that, you know, I know so many women who do this like day to day, and they just don't have that title, or they don't know to call themselves a producer. You know, like when we're in the room with Tori Blake and we're writing, and, you know, she has a lot of cool producer ideas as well, but I don't think she would refer to herself as a producer. So I think, you know, being able to take that power and kind of be able to step into that role, you know, in confidence and knowing that you have the resources and the tools to back you up, I think that's kind of one step in the right direction that we can be making. And, you know, especially now that people are more aware and there is like a more, you know, concentrated effort to, you know, hopefully overturn that number. But yeah, it's not surprising, but what's surprising is that there are so many talented women and non-binary producers out there that are just not discovered, or they don't have all the resources that a lot of their male counterparts have.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, well, we've been talking about y'all's songs, so I definitely wanted to hit Jim. What's kind of the upcoming rollout plans for this collection coming about?
Sure. So we have about, I would say, 6, maybe 5 done. If we can get Megs to finish her track, maybe. That'll be another one. But so there'll be 8 right now that I'm working on. The original idea I had was that I would do a couple singles, and then we would put out like a vinyl release of the record, 8 songs. But recently I've been rethinking this, and I think what I want to do is release every song individually, because what that will do is that gives each female producer their spotlight and their time. Otherwise, what would happen is we would have 2 or 3 singles, focus on those producers, and then there would be 6 more songs that are released. And I'm worried that things are going to slip through the cracks. So, you know, I'm used to the old band type release of, you know, a couple singles and a record, but I think we're going to do it differently. I mean, you know, it's 2022, y'all, right? So I think we're just going to release every song. And I've already asked probably two or three other women to continue this. So I think it's just going to be like an ongoing thing. After I release maybe the eight here, then we would have a vinyl release. Karen Kelleher from Gold Rush Vinyl is on the advisory board for this project. So we'll press a vinyl record out, and it'll be just like volume one, and it'll have all eight tracks. I think it's going to be a really good release, though.
Yeah, and Gold Rush Vinyl is Austin's only local vinyl producer, and they're doing some really innovative stuff over there.
And I think it's the only female-owned record plant in the country, I think.
Yes, that sounds right. Yeah, I love Karen. She's so cool. Yeah, the song that is out already is called How High, that you can find on Spotify and other streaming services under Project Traction.
Right.
Yeah, well, I know also when I was talking to you too that, you know, in doing this project of producing these songs, there'd been some pretty cool other changes that kind of ended up aligning in your own creative lives. Sarah, did you want to talk about that and what your song kind of led to musically?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, similar to Meg's interaction with Jim, it was kind of, this came at a very serendipitous time for me when I was primarily a music teacher and was really feeling drawn to kind of, for the first time in my life, be a freelance musician full time. I've always had a job of some kind, which is pretty normal for most musicians, particularly women. So I was kind of already heading in the direction to kind of wanting to branch out, diversify, and do freelance work. Subsequently, after I finished the song with Lizzie, about a month or so later, she called me to ask me to produce a whole album with her, which I'm super excited about. I'm also working on a song with my friend Anastasia of a band called Hong Kong Wigs, and she's a great writer as well. It just kind of, I don't know, you know, it's like chicken or the egg kind of situation. I don't know how much is like manifested and how much it was like because of the program and stuff, but it definitely, has like helped me kind of realize that I can do it and go full freelance and, you know, still live and support myself and pay my bills and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I'll plug you that, you know, Sarah Hauser is open for production and other collaborative services. And
slhauser.com.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I know you, Megs, had some concurrent projects going on as well that kind of aligned well with getting that production mentorship, if you want to talk more about that.
Yeah, it kind of worked out the same way. Like, I talked to Jim about doing Project Traction, and I think our first meeting was right before I went home to New Orleans to film my first short film called Little Trumpet. And I had already been talking to Dougie about, you know, like, you know, for music, like, maybe we should do something, but we always do something as ourselves, as Magna Carta. And, you know, once I got this opportunity, I was like, well, like, what if, like, we produced, or like, what if I did more of like a producer kind of vibe for the soundtrack and the score for the film? And so these two things were going on at the same time, and I was, you know, getting in the studio with Jim and working with all of these musicians and just kind of being able to take all of my notes there and, you know, all my experience there and apply it to when, you know, we got back home probably in October from shooting the film. And I went into the studio with that project and pretty much took everything I learned from Jim and, you know, brought it there. And, you know, now we have like two dope projects in the works. And I think it was all, honestly, I think I needed the confidence and, you know, I needed the mentorship and having someone challenge me and say, like, you know, this is very possible. Like, you can do this without writing, which I still ended up writing anyway.
I asked you to do that verse, though, so it wasn't you.
but I think just having the mentorship was important because I was working with someone who was always encouraging me to take that step and, showing me the ropes and, really just instilling the confidence in me to take it to another project and do the same thing. And I've just been grateful to be able to work with, if I am working with men, working with great men who see me and realize I'm in the room and, respect that role that, that I'm in. And I think that's where those two projects tied up. And I'm just grateful to be able to be a part of both of them and kind of be like, the vessel for this work and all these other artists that are coming through, these projects. So.
Yeah, and I think so much of what y'all are bringing up is just the kind of essential element of having multiple financial and creative avenues if you're going to be a full-time artist, which was a big part of this project. Yeah, so like, Jim, how is that? I know that's been essential to you, obviously, in building your own career, but how do you kind of approach that?
Yeah, I mean, I had a day job for quite a while I was in Spoon. And I just sort of decided that I needed, I couldn't just quit my day job to be a drummer in a band, so Brits like writing songs and other stuff. So I, started buying a bunch of vintage gear, started building a studio, and I started learning how to engineer and produce so that I could do that while he was writing or if the band took a break. Also, I built a studio so that if I'm touring, someone else could maybe rent that studio. So I sort of tried to get a plan together so that I felt comfortable, not getting that paycheck every week, and I feel like, I've still missed that regular paycheck, it's definitely stressful being an artist, but it having a lot of things going on is really good, and it helps me be creative too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the kind of confidence to begin either putting on your website or mentioning to people that you are available for creative services. I know as being a freelance writer, that can sometimes be the hardest part, is just deciding that, the shop's open, this is the work I'm trying to do now. It's difficult.
Right. But the other thing is I'm doing these projects. I'm working with Megs and Sarah, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, man, y'all are producing the shit out of this. It's you have already have the experience. So it's so I'm not worried about any of this stuff at all. So
yeah, and I'd love to hear, I know you mentioned multiple times that kind of the mentorship will extend into potential use of public hi-fi and definitely not just be one song.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep bugging them. I said, Megs, who are you producing next? What do you got going?
Please do.
Sarah, what do you got going on? I feel like I don't want to just do these 8 things and this have it fall off. So there's things I feel like as a producer that help you. One of them is people checking in with you, wondering how you're doing and do you need help? Are you stuck on something like that? So continue that mentorship. But then also I'm lucky enough to have a studio. So do y'all need, to track drums? Do you need to come over and use keys or do you want to borrow a mic or whatever? There's things that I hope the producers will reach out to me for if needed. So I do feel like there is I want to continue this partnership with everyone I'm working with. So
yeah, and I think that was interesting to see in this first kind of class of Project Traction that while y'all are both, people who have your own musical projects, there were some other people that were more multi-instrumentalists, or there was one woman who was more of a producer engineer type herself. So
right, yeah.
There was a lot of variation in this group that was cool to see. Yeah, well, talking about just having the studio be a big part of this, I know you were kind of thinking about this being a model that potentially other people can use and that how you want to move it forward, if you want to talk more about that.
Yeah, I'm sort of, I mean, I'm open for ideas, obviously, but like I don't, you know, I think this is a sort of a scalable model of mentorship, I think. You know, if everything has to go through me, that's probably going to be a problem, you know, like I can't like do a ton of it. But if we're going to make this number change from like 10% or 5% to 51%, which would be a great goal, is that we need to make it scalable. So one idea is to invite other producers into Project Traction. So for instance, like my friend John Vanderslice in LA, he's a producer friend of mine. I could reach out to him and I could be like, there has to be, you know, some great women that you work with. Why don't you follow this model and co-produce a track with someone, and Project Traction will pay your studio time, and then you can be on volume 2. That release will come out on the next record. What that will do is it actually makes this not like an Austin-only project. It makes it national or international. And then it also decreases everything going through me, so we can actually have more women producers in, you know, participate in this, in the mentorship. I feel like that is a good model. The other thing is that this is also scalable, I feel like, to other industries. I had someone reach out to me from the film industry, and, you know, producers in film is very male-dominated too. So that would be the other thing, having a film producer recognize someone to take under their wing and co-produce, you know, films or something like that. It just, to me, mentorship is a lot stronger, obviously, than like focus groups or things like that. You know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, just how to increase those numbers. And I feel like we need to step it up and like just start moving, you know. And I feel like this helps.
Yeah, I think like asking about how to be more inclusive is like doesn't really go anywhere. Like people just need to start acting. And I think that that projects like this will encourage that, to, you know, to kind of find ways to incorporate more, bring more people in that are not given the opportunities. So yeah.
And I feel like, you know, as a producer, like I said, when we started, I've worked with so many badass women. It's like, come on, y'all producers, guys, step up, you know, you can identify people and like, just make it happen. So
yeah, I think the essential element of turning a studio space into 8 production credits is like very doable and practical, and that's forthcoming. I know one of the first things you said to me when we sat down was, I don't want this to just be a discussion. I'm tired of panels about this stuff. So yeah. I love that we're
did
now
I say
on a panel
panels?
About
yeah.
it.
Yeah. This panel is to get the word out, though. So,
yes,
you know.
Yes. The project has already been going.
Yeah, yeah.
Been cooking for a year. Yeah, well, I think I was just going to ask if y'all had anything else to add that is kind of the advice that you give your friends coming out of this about maybe trying to move into diversifying their ways of music making or moving into production.
Yeah, I would say, from my experience, really, and I know a lot of people say this, but just ask. Ask for what you want. Be clear about what you want. And honestly, that it got me pretty far with some of the projects that I've been working on. And, you know, you kind of don't know who's, like, on your team and, like, who's rooting for you until you kind of talk to them about some of the things that you want to do. Like, we were just talking about space. Like, space is super important because as a musician, not only is, like, a studio space just hard to get in just in general because, like, you know, we can't afford it all. So we can't afford to be in the studio for, like, days and days and days like we want to without a bill running up, you know? So like space and accessibility is like super important. And, you know, when people ask, you know, how can I help you? Or, you know, what do you need to make this happen? It's just like, you know, a literal place to work in is a start, you know? And there's lots of studios around here. And it's just kind of, I mean, I know they have to stay open and, you know, they have to make money as well, but it's kind of like a cycle, you know? If we get in there and we can produce and we can create, you know, that door will, you know, it will revolve. Like, so many people will come in and out and so much work will be created there. So I would say, you know, always ask and always be forward about, you know, what it is you're doing. And, you know, not to say that you're not going to get pushback or people aren't going to always see the vision, but, you know, one thing they can never say is that, you know, you were quiet about it. And I know for me, like, we were just talking about it, I'm kind of, like, more on the chill side. And so asking is, you know, it's really hard for me. And it's really hard to kind of put all my cards out there and, you know, really kind of push for the things that I believe in and that I want. But, you know, in the past couple of years and having experiences like this where, you know, I found that that works, you know, and it works for me, getting out of that, you know, getting out of my comfort zone and really pushing for the things that are important to me really got me far. And so, I mean, my only advice would be to just continue being that visionary and, like, seek the pieces that you need to put it together. And, you know, you never know who wants to help. And you never know what's available, you know, until you kind of start poking around and seeing what's out there.
I love that. Yeah, that's super helpful. Was there anything else, Sarah, you wanted to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think speaking for your needs is so important. I think the only other two kind of bits of advice that have been really great for me is saying yes to a lot of things, even when you don't think you're qualified or that you have the know-how to do it. I've learned the most by saying yes to jobs that I had no business kind of like being a part of. So say yes to a lot of things. And then the other is to, kind of, not being afraid to say you don't know something. I was like, I've been terrified so many times in my life of being the woman in the room that doesn't know the answer to something or not know how to do something. And, one of my friends posted, something on her socials a while ago and it was about reclaiming the power of, I don't know. And not being afraid to not have all the answers, but know that that doesn't mean you're not capable of solving the problem. So those two things I keep with me when I'm kind of approaching any project, and they've always served me well.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Yeah, well, I think for the last 10 minutes, we'll definitely take some questions from y'all if you have any. I just request that you speak into the microphone over there if anyone had any thoughts. But while y'all are thinking on that, I wanted to definitely plug the Project Traction. You can find on social media, and they do have a digital tip jar so that this model can keep going and invite a whole new kind of round of women and non-binary producers.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh my gosh, this is so weird.
Hi.
I'm not biased at all because I don't work on the PR social. I mean, I do, but no, I love Rachel. Like, I feel like you asked so many great questions already, so it's kind of hard to like ask questions when you've hit so many things already. But I was gonna say, and I'm like, I'm not sure who would be best to answer this, maybe Jim, but what do you think got us here in the first place with like such disparity in the gender gap here?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was like so surprised by the statistic, you know? Like Sarah said, I start thinking and I'm like, yeah, when I'm in the studio, it's like all dudes anyway, you know? So, I mean, it made sense, but I don't know.
I mean, I don't think that answer. It's any surprise that like any workforce is male dominated. You know, like the 40-hour work week model is based on the idea that there is a mother staying at home and taking care of the household. You know, so I think that the idea that there are less women working in any field isn't, you know, it's not really a surprise. I think it's kind of a product of the way that our society has been built and run for 100 years or something, you know?
Yeah, for music, I think about it a lot of it too. Like, I have an older brother, and like, he played bass when we were growing up. And it's like, I love music just as much. I'm a music journalist, but you know, I didn't start singing and playing keyboards until I was in my 20s. So I feel like so often, like, women, because of, I don't know, just different things that hold you back, like, are maybe a couple years behind. And obviously that would mean a lot of people go from independent musician to producer years later. So it would just take longer and take more resources to get into that production role is at least, you know, something I've thought about a little bit. But yeah, I also wanted to plug that. I make sure I mention that Meg's project Magna Carta has a show tomorrow at 3 p.m. while you're here.
Yeah, come through. We're on South Congress tomorrow, so at the Yeti Showcase.
Also, what's the film release date, or what's the film?
Yeah.
What's happening with that?
Yeah, we're looking to release it or premiere the film Little Trumpet still summer or fall season. So
nice.
It's coming, and the music will follow. So hopefully I can get a track done over at the studio.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Plug it up.
Yeah, and that will be Meg's directorial debut.
Yeah, it will be.
That's so amazing. Yeah, I mean, I think kind of maybe a different version of that question, too, is like, it can be a little bit tricky to enter into these spaces of, you know, a panel with a title like Fighting the Gender Gap. And I was wondering on your side, Jim, I know that you were trying to be careful entering this project. Like, what have you kind of learned yourself through this process?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was more, I'm not worried about like the production side or mentoring or stuff like that. I feel like what I wanted to make sure was that the message was like strong and sincere, you know? And like, I'm not doing this for me, you know? I really love doing this. So I wanted to just, I'm getting a lot of feedback from people like, hey, check out how I'm presenting this and checking out like what my message is, you know, as a, you know, white male. I just want to make sure that I'm, you know, presenting this correctly and stuff like that. You know, I seriously do feel like we need to move that number, you know, like I said, it's like so many talented women that we have to make a change there. And it is sort of fun and exciting to me, that I actually have something like a studio and expertise that can make a direct difference. You know, I mean, a lot of times in your life, you don't find like something that you're like, whoa, if I do this, I could help that, you know? So I feel like, you know, that's what gets me really excited about it, so.
Absolutely, yeah, I think I see we have another question, maybe.
Hi, my name is Audria. I'm a local journalist, independent. I work predominantly with the hip hop community. My question is for Jim. Just to extend on that topic of toxic male masculinity, and what does it mean for you to be an ally and in a way minimize your voice so that the women can be at the forefront?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I just started the project out to be a very collaborative and a partnership between me and the female non-binary producer that I'm working with. I really want it to be 50-50. Like I said, they're doing it already, you know? And so just, you know, giving the confidence to the musicians in order to show them that they can actually do this, you know? So I don't know. I'm sort of a backseat guy anyway. Like I like being, I'm a drummer. Like I you know, the cymbals, I need cymbals in front of me when I'm on stage, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, I like being in the background, and this is just part of, you know, something that I feel like it can help and make a difference at.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think I also didn't yet read the, alongside Megs and Sarah, the first volume one of Project Traction will include Emily Baze of Leyline, Cam Franklin of The Suffers, Lucille Garner, Mary Claire Glazer, who we mentioned, and then Grace Yoon are the other artists. But yeah, y'all go ahead.
My name is Bomani. First, I'd like to say thank you to the panelists. This has been really enjoyable. And to Jim, because one of my future goals is to create affordable studio spaces. I think it's ridiculous that you have to pay thousands of dollars to express yourself.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Very easy question. I lost my job. What is your favorite DAW or DAW?
My favorite
DAW? In reverse order, alphabetical on stage.
Wait, my favorite DAW in alphabetical order?
Backwards.
Wow.
First, the panelist's favorite DAW.
Wow.
I can't answer that question. I have no idea what you are talking about.
I demo everything in Logic. I operate on a very strict music educator budget. I think I spent about $200 to get a home setup that worked for me. And Logic has done, I haven't even bought any extra library or anything. I use all of the sounds that are available through MIDI in there. I have a very small MIDI controller that was extremely affordable. But I've done a lot of stuff in Logic, and I've seen a lot of artists that have more resources than I do, and they still use Logic. But I think it is to me like in terms of being able to do lots of things within a program, I've had a lot of success with it.
Yeah, Logic's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
I actually started, because my dad does music, and my first DAW that I used was Pro Tools, and so I learned everything on Pro Tools, and then they got, you know, really strict with carrying around like a piece to plug into the computer, and I didn't want to do all that. Yeah, it was a lot. And it's a very expensive program, of course, whereas Logic is like a lot more affordable, and it's very straightforward for someone that's kind of like just getting into it. So downgraded into Logic, and now that I'm kind of messing around with more of my live performance stuff, I've kind of dabbled in Ableton a little bit. But if you know something about it, teach me, because I don't know what I'm looking at, to be honest.
I also
is YouTube tutorials. Yeah.
I love YouTube. I also think one thing that was really helpful for me too is that Rock and Roll Rentals is actually a great resource in Austin. It is, you can rent things, try them out for very cheap. They have very reasonable rates. They take, I've only had good customer service experiences with them, and I've saved myself a lot of money because I've tried out some really expensive pieces of equipment that I would have just thrown money at and then realized that wasn't what I needed. And it gives you the time and space to bring it home, work on it a little bit, try sounds, try, you know, apply it to your live show if that's what you want to do with it. And then you have the time to be like, okay, this is not what I needed. Take it back, you know.
Real quick, I know Pro Tools. That's the one I mainly use, only because that's what all recording studios use. So if you're looking at working in a studio, it does help that you know Pro Tools. But an outlier DAW is called Renoise. It's a tracker, and it's basically sort of like how early Aphex Twin records were made. And it's pretty badass. If you ever listen to those records and you're like, how does he change the tone of the hi-hat every, you know, millisecond, it's with a tracker. And so I play around with that a little bit. It's probably my favorite sort of outlier.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Thank all of y'all. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are we good to take a couple more questions or should we wrap it up? Okay. Awesome.
Hey, what's going
on? Hi.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, what's going on? I just wanted to make sure, Sarah, you plug your list that you made of all the female non-binary musician sessions.
Thank you.
Studio people, which is really needed. I'm a live sound engineer. I'm always looking for like subs. I'm looking for people to work with and people to hire. And I'm always trying to call women first because they're, you know, like anyone that speaks to any woman in the music industry, they have to be twice as good even to get in the room. Or culturally, that is kind of what's reinforced. And so when you work with women, it brings a whole other energy. I don't need to explain any of this to y'all, but I just want to reiterate to everybody to hire women, recommend women.
Yes, absolutely. I what he's referring to is I had a friend who's I would argue maybe one of the like most talented bass players in this city. She lost her job with her touring band. Really because of her gender. That's a big simplification of what actually happened. But the fact was that she was a woman and it was an issue for a number of reasons. But she subsequently, I was like, why is this person that is like the most insane bass player in the world not in every session? Like why every touring band that was big that was going on the road that I saw that was coming out of Austin was hiring all men there as their backing band. And it just kind of infuriated me. So what I started was a Google form, and I have a Google spreadsheet of all women and non-binary musicians that are available for touring. It has their associated acts, the genres they're comfortable with, any other skills that they have, any interests they have, and their contact information. And I am happy to share that with whoever would like it, but I wanted to get more women hired, basically.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think we have time for one more. It'd be great.
Cool. My name's Kimiko. I have a question for Megs. As a Black woman, I'm just curious about how you navigate these industries, both film and music, that are both male-dominated and, especially in terms of gatekeepers, white male-dominated. How do you navigate that? How do you sort of, especially stepping into these more leadership roles of producing in music and directing in filmmaking, how do you sort of take up space and command respect in spaces where a lot of those folks aren't necessarily going to afford you that respect off the bat?
That's a good question. It's different in every space. We can argue that I was disrespected last night at a show that I was invited to play. And so, you know, sometimes it's one of those things where you shoulder it and you kind of keep going because I don't just show up by myself. I show up and I represent for a lot of other people. My guys that I play with, I represent for them, and I have to be a leader and, you know, they're following my lead. And to kind of piggyback off of that, one thing that is important in navigating those spaces as both a filmmaker and a musician is surrounding myself with a solid support system. I work with people who respect me. I work with allies who stand up for me. And I never feel alone in those moments because I purposely surround myself with people who are good folks, you know, people who will recommend the right people to be in the rooms, people who, you know, would reiterate those things. And that's kind of the building block. And honestly, that's how you reestablish this whole thing is by changing minds. So I like to be around people who are already, you know, we're like-minded, we're sticking up for the same things, we have the same beliefs, and as a Black queer woman, that can be hard, that can be emotionally exhausting. And it's a lot, but I know that the things that I'm working for and toward, they're bigger than me. And I always have to think first about who and what I represent. And so I think it's just about being intentional. Sometimes I don't go to those spaces where I know I'm gonna feel harmed or I'm gonna feel uncomfortable, or if I don't have my support system, or I don't have people around who, you know, really understand what it means to be in that space with me. And I don't like to work with folks who erase me and who don't hear me in the room or don't respect me. And I respect everyone I work with. So, you know, I think it's a real simple aspect. So I would say the main way I combat it is, like, I always say two heads are better than one. I can't do it all by myself. And so having a strong support system and having people who think like me and who believe in the causes that I stand for, and the person that I am, because just walking in a room is political for someone like me. I think it really is just about, you know, we're all human. We all have emotions, and it's difficult. So having people, having the right people around you is very important, and not feeling alone in spaces like that.
Well, I think that's an excellent note to end on. Thanks so much for coming, y'all. And I'm sure these panelists will hang around after if there were any other questions. Thank you.
Thanks, y'all.
Thanks, everyone. Appreciate you coming out.
Thank y'all.